now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Good news and bad news, girls. The good news is your dates are here.
What's the bad news?
They're dead.
Ah! See, a United States astro robot becomes a creature of death. Oh.
And Dave.
We have come here to this planet for one purpose only, to acquire breeding stuff to repopulate our planet.
He who breaks the law shall be punished. Back to the House of Pain.
Back to the House of Pain.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-movie podcast from classic cults and all the cheese in between, the movies are B. Darren Heyman is grade A, and I'm your host, Jason Giaconetti. Once again, a solo effort, and this time it's a follow-up. We talked about the first Omen, now we're talking Immaculate, and I'll get to it right after this.
God save me for a reason, but I'm still searching for what that reason is. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Hello? I know God saved me for a reason, but I guess I'm still searching for what that reason is.
Too much blood of Christ.
It's a miracle. You are with child.
Out of all the women in the world, why did he choose me?
How can we trust what's inside you?
Suffering is love. Suffering is love.
Immaculate made its debut at the South by Southwest Festival March 12, 2024, and then its U.S. release was March 22, 2024, with an 89-minute running time. Your director is Michael Monahan, who is known he won a Daytime Emmy Award for his outstanding directing on the children's series Ghostwriter, and this is the only film that you probably would even know him for. Your writer here is Andrew Lobel. Your producers were David Bernard, Sydney Sweeney, Jonathan Devine, Teddy Scherzman, and Michael Helminger. And Sydney Sweeney is the main star. Alvaro Morte, Bernardetto Porricelli, Dora Romano, Giorgio Soclinelli, and Somina Tobasco. Those are all names you probably don't know because they're all Italian names. And not exactly the you know, big U.S. stars. Your music is by Will Bates. Your production companies are Black Bear Pictures, 50/50 Films, and Middle Child Pictures. And, of course, your distribution is done by the now gaining lots of steam and foothold, especially after Long Legs, Neon. For those of you who don't remember Neon, they won the Academy Award. Their picture, Parasite, that they distributed, wound up winning the Best Picture a few years ago. So, and your budget, about $9 million with a box office of just over $28 million. So pretty good return on investment. Immaculate was actually in development as early as 2014 when Sydney Sweeney first auditioned for the role of the, with the writer Andrew Lovell. It fell into developmental hell, as a lot of movies kind of do, and then she wound up going on to be on the TV series Euphoria, where she had her breakout there, and then she often collaborated with Michael Monahan during that. What happened was then, in October of 2022, was announced that Sweeney had joined the cast of the film, and Monahan and directing, and Sweeney serving as producer under the 50/50 Films banner. Sweeney actually purchased the rights to the screenplay and wound up, she's the one who brought Monahan on board. You wind up having all this happen. So I know during the First Omen, we talked about, and I hadn't seen this yet. I finished the recording the First Omen, then I sat down that same day and watched this because I had to know how much they were the same. This movie was in development for far longer than I thought it was. And Sydney Sweeney was 17 when she first auditioned for this. And now being nearly 26, 27, it's a much different picture. And when I get into what's going on in the plot, you'll see that, like, man, if this was a 17-year-old, now she doesn't look particularly old here, but knowing that she's in her 20s at least, okay, but like this would have been some really heavy lifting for a 17-year-old actress to do if they'd already gone through. The locations, the Villa Parisi, was actually used in Hatchet for the Honeymoon, A Bay of Blood, Blood for Dracula, and Burial Lights, and the catacomb sequences were shot in real catacombs in Rome. This movie shot beautifully. It is, but I'm going to say this right now, you 100% can tell it is different than the First Omen, just on the production, just on slick. Not saying it's cheap, it's shot more gritty. It's shot the way shots are done. Not that they're poorly done. It's just, it definitely shows that there's not a heavy influence from a studio that's looking to put out a certain piece of film going from there. So it is an interesting dichotomy when you look at the two movies side by side. And anyone who said that they are the exact same movie or they're absolutely twins of each other, they're not. They definitely have pieces that overlap, but they certainly are not the exact same film. So the story goes a little something like this. Sister Mary sneaks into Superior's bedroom at night and steals a ring of keys to escape through the locked gates of the Catholic convent. Four hooded figures capture and break her leg, then knock her unconscious. Mary later wakes up in a coffin and is buried alive. All right, so this movie opens hot. The leg break is, it's harsh. But you know, you kind of have a feeling again, going in, kind of having an idea what the movie might be about, that it's not going to be really pleasant. And, I can see why, many, depending on how, what you believe in and your faith and stuff like that, this might not sit well with you. Young novice Sister Cecilia, turned to Christianity at an early age. After surviving a drowning in a freezing lake and then being declared dead for 7 minutes, Cecilia is convinced God has saved her for a purpose. She receives invitation from Father Sal Tedeschi to join a convent in Italy that tends to dying nuns. So hang on right there. So the main difference here, and this is one of the glaring ones, in the First Omen, they're an orphanage, so they're helping children. And in this one, they're dealing with dying nuns. I mean, it's both opposite ends of the life cycle here going on. So that's just one major difference that we see. Even though everything's shot in Rome, it's all beautiful, but that all parts fits into what has to be put there. Anyway, Celia takes her final vows to adhere to her evangelical consuls and becomes a nun, being decorated with a rosary. Yeah, I didn't mean to stumble all those words. I was just trying to read what I was doing. Cecilia befriends Sister Gwen and is struck by certain oddities, such as elder nuns having cross-shaped scars on the soles of their feet. The convent's chapel, houses a holy nail relic that crucified Jesus. Okay, so this is a big part of this. So they have what they're claiming to be one of the spikes, one of the nails that nailed Jesus to the cross. And again, you got to buy into this movie, because if you don't buy in, you're not going to buy any of this stuff. But that winds up being a key piece. After, so after she's go down there with one of her, the superiors, she's handed it and she passes out. After having a nightmare of a hooded figure, Cecilia is shocked to learn that she is pregnant, even though she is a virgin. The convent's inhabitants begin to treat her as if she's the next Virgin Mary, with many proclaiming her child is a blessing. So this now leads to where people are going to say, well, this is just like the First Omen. In the First Omen, she's taken out and she's drugged at a nightclub. She wakes up. She doesn't remember what happens. Well, we know that that's where we're starting to get into the idea that she is now being this. She's now going to be the mother of the Antichrist, because now she's mated with Satan. Here, we're not sure what happened. It could be that. We're not 100% sure yet, but we know that she's now a virgin, and now they're looking at it as a blessing. After another nun sister, Isabel tries to drown Cecilia out of jealousy and later commits suicide. Now, the suicide is, again, very reminiscent of First Omen. Difference here, she doesn't hang herself. She jumps off of a window, or might have been pushed, but she winds up slamming into the courtyard, and bloody and gruesome. Yeah, you expect a suicide to be. It is definitely, there are definitely nods. There are definitely some parallels, but again, not exactly the same. Commit suicide. Cecilia throws up one of her teeth and her health worsens. Her request to be taken to a proper hospital is denied constantly by Father Tadushi. Gwen publicly chastises the convent superiors for their abnormality, but it's then taken away by Father Ducey and Deacon Enzo. And this is where, so Gwen is the only one who kind of sees through all this. Everyone else is believing she's the next Mary. She's this. This is a blessing. And the entire time, Gwen is like, this is not a blessing. How did this happen? Something's wrong. Like, she's always questioning, which is great, because you need that voice. That's the voice of the audience, and you need that in the movie. Because she has to constantly, you know, question whatever. And, you know, Cecilia is not really sure how any of this happened, because she's confused. And Gwen is the voice saying, hey, question this. Don't let this go. Cecilia notices an inscription of 2 Corinthians 11:14 behind her mirror, behind the Virgin Mary picture in her room, which leads to an ominous phrase in the Bible. Cecilia reads her file and is shocked to find information about her childhood accident. Hearing a woman screaming, she ventures further in and is horrified to witness a hooded figure cutting out Gwen's tongue. An elderly nun appears and silences Cecilia. She begins to escape, but the elderly nun chastises her and says that she will never leave the convent. All right, so now we're at a point where we're getting in deeper and deeper. This movie's got layers to it, and I'm not really doing it justice. I don't want to give all of it away, because you really should sit down and watch it. I'm just going to give you the overview of what's happening here. This movie was, to me, very powerful in what it was saying. Some people might not follow the same thing, and that's fine. You're welcome to your opinion. But the idea, though, is that there's something clearly going on here. There's something evil. There's something wrong. There's something behind the scenes, even though they're saying, what a blessing. This is so, she's, you know, treating her like she's this miracle, and all these things that, you know, kind of don't sit well when you're saying it. Cecilia fakes a miscarriage to be taken to the hospital by but the deception is exposed and she is tied up. Now she tries to escape. She cuts the head off a chicken and she uses all the chicken blood to, until she's bleeding out. Tedeschi explains that he was now again, this is where you got to believe this. A geneticist, before he became a priest, and used DNA samples taken from the holy nail to impregnate nuns in the hopes of ushering in the new Messiah. Let that sink in for a second. So this is not the devil raping someone to make the Antichrist. This is a member of the Catholic Church trying to use science to somehow clone DNA from over 2,000 years ago, which is grossly impossible, and impregnating a nun with it, and even though it's so to form that what they're hoping to be the new Messiah. Before Cecilia Tedeschi's numerous failed attempts, often resulting in malformed fetuses, Tedeschi brands crosses into Cecilia's feet as a symbol Also, the same that many other nuns have. So let's just go there for a sec. This is a very hard scene. We're watching this, and then they brand her, and it is so painful. It is so painful to watch, and it's so hard to watch, just as a viewer, because you want to stop them, but obviously you can't. Celia tries to make another attempt at escape. She beats Mother Superior to death using a crucifix, and then shortly after that, her water breaks because why not? She manages to strangle the cardinal with his rosary before dousing Tedeschi in ethanol. Tedeschi arrives to stop her using physical force, but Celia now escapes by lighting the ethanol on fire with the lighter. It says she's trying to light up the entire underground lab, whatever, where they have it. She's hurt. She's got the wounds on her feet. Her water's broke. Tedeschi manages to break down the lab door after extinguishing the flames and continues his pursuit against Cecilia, forcing her to flee into the catacombs under the convent. Real catacombs. Everything's realistic here. As I always say, why build it when you can just go use it? Tedeschi finds her just as she's about to escape and struggle, and then they start fighting. He tries to cut Cecilia's stomach open, so he cuts her with a syringe, and she stabs him in the throat with the holy nail relic that she has stolen before from the chapel. After exiting the catacombs through a hole, she agonizingly gives birth and bites the umbilical cord herself. This is the hardest part of this movie. Like, this is one of the hardest things. She literally is screaming in absolute anguish and pain, and then takes the umbilical cord, bites the umbilical cord. Again, this is where probably most people, if they didn't like this movie, up to this point, you certainly didn't like the ending. And if you were kind of on the fence and you kind of are more like, if you were kind of like, well, I don't know, this might turn you off. To me, this is where it separates itself from not being a studio picture and not having to worry about trying to fit to all the masses or fit in as part of a series of movies. Remember, The Omen, the first Omen is the sixth Omen movie in the series. Anyway, so she cuts the umbilical cord with her teeth. She's horrified by the sight of the baby, which is heard making noises strange and they're more animalistic. We never actually see the baby. We kind of see it in a hay, like faded off. It does look darker, but that doesn't mean it's not covered in blood and stuff. So you're not sure if it like is an animal or not, but Cecilia stumbles away and grabs a large rock, and she walks back over to the baby. And this is literally how this movie ends. Sorry for those of you who haven't watched it, but I always tell you to watch the movie before you see it. And then as the movie ends, she brings it above her head and brings it down with a bam thud at the end as we cut to black and do the implications that she's crushing the baby. Yeah, that movie ending has a lot of cojones. That is so not an ending you would ever get. The idea you would never get that ending anywhere from a studio picture. There's no way. Not at this day and age. No one's taking those chances except some of these independents. That's one of the reasons why. Not that I'm advocating any of these violence towards babies or any of this stuff. It's a movie, guys. It's all fake. So the whole thing is that. But I thought, man, they went for it. They went for it. Every chance they could, they did. They went for it over and over again. The drowning scene, the burning your feet. If you did not see the first Omen and saw this first, I don't know if you would like the first Omen as much. The first Omen's good, but I think this one has more of a punch to it. And if you don't like the punch it has, then you'll definitely like the first Omen better. It's much more tame compared to this. But this one goes for the jugular. This one goes right at you. Immaculate was released right around the same time as the Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, I'm not saying it hurt it because it's a very different crowd, but Late Night with the Devil came out right around the same time. Now, if you haven't seen Late Night with the Devil, please go watch it. I love that film. We talked about it on The Vault. It is one of my favorites of 2024. Well worth your time to go see it. Most critics said the same thing. They said that Sydney Sweeney was amazing. She carries this movie. She's obviously a producer. She's a vested interest in it doing well. But her performance is spot on. She plays this young lady who is both at the same time scared and yet powerful, and comes through. And overall, a lot of people, it's not for everyone, but I think that's the entire point. If a movie's for everyone, if it's that mainstream kind of thing, you don't get a lot of punch. That's why I think sometimes those movies are so middle of the road, which is what sometimes becomes, middle of the road movies sometimes become that B word, boring. And that's one thing I say all the time. You can be good or you can be bad. I'm okay with the movie being bad, but don't be boring. Don't be boring, because if you're boring, then no one's ever gonna watch it again. I have watched movies that are not great movies, that are certainly not spectacularly like amazing films, but they're like, and they're not. I mean, I'm not talking like, I'm certainly not talking Hereditary bad. Hereditary is absolute trash. What I'm saying is like a bad movie. It's not shot well. It's whatever, but it has this like little, you know, kind of like, you know, it has this little place in life, right? A lot of 80s, end of the cycle slasher, stuff like that. Yeah, all those things have their place. I'm not looking at, you know, an old end of the cycle, like, I'm trying to think, like even a movie like Curtains or something like that. I'm not holding Curtains at the same level where I'd hold, like, you know, great horror movies like the original Halloween or things like that of all time. But they have their place and they're enjoyable. This movie is not something I'm going to pop on just as an enjoyable watch. It's not an enjoyable watch. It's a dedicated sit down and watch it. It is not for everyone. I would not let Haley watch this. I would not let Kelly watch this. It is too upsetting. But by the same token, that's what it wanted to do. And a lot of critics noticed that. It got pretty good reviews from the critics. Like things like IMDb, whatever, just trashed it. That is not necessarily people who actually have even seen the movie, but knew to trash it just for the content in it. Because that is still one of the agendas we hear from constantly from people is, well, we got to make sure that we protect children. What child is sitting watching this movie? We're not protecting anyone. If you cannot allow yourself to see outside of your narrow purview, then that's a you issue, not a me issue. And you can stow it because I don't need to hear it. And that's part of the problem, is we see now these movies that are being pushed out, because let's be honest, these movies that, again, I know this was 10 years in the making, but it got pushed forward because of all the stuff that's happening with Roe vs. Wade, and people want to chime in on that and have an opinion on that, even though people who don't even need to have an opinion on things have an opinion. But that's, we started getting movies where it's more about a woman not being able to choose and all this stuff. That's a whole different can of beans. Looking at just a movie for what it is, and yes, it can have a meaning and a purpose. I'm not saying this has to change your life. I always say it all the time, movies don't have to change your life. But if it has something to it, has a little more punch, that sometimes goes hand in hand with it not being pleasant to watch. This movie is shot beautifully. A lot of this movie is enjoyable. But I know full well that if I say to, you know, if I had this on and Haley was there, I'd say, no, you can't watch this. This is not for you. Why? Because I know it would be very upsetting to her, right? She's not there yet at 13, years old. She's not there yet to watch, or 14 years old, 13, 14 years old. She's not there to watch that level of violence or that something happening like this, right? So if you're someone who is easily, you know, disturbed by this, then you can skip. But I'm telling you, it feels very much in just like the first Omen, very much in a revival of the nunsploitation that we got back in the day. And those movies are certainly not for everybody. Certainly not. And I can honestly say this, these movies, this nunsploitation is much more on the horror end of things compared to the grimier sex part of things than the others. Anyway, did you see Immaculate? Are you one of the people who saw it in the theaters? Because again, it made $28 million. So it wasn't like no one saw it. But you're up in, again, theaters. To go to a movie is so expensive nowadays, and it's so hard to kind of plunk down that money. So I don't know if you saw it. Did you? I mean, have you checked it out on Blu-ray? If you have, let me know. I'd love to hear from you. Did you watch it and get disgusted by it? You can tell me. It's fine. Again, I have no problem with your opinion. I'm just saying is your opinion does not mean that I have to always share it, you know, kind of thing. Because there are movies that I love that some people hate. And there are movies that I detest with a passion that some people are like, oh, they're amazing. And then I have to then question sometimes, what were you watching? Because what I saw on the screen and what other people have seen don't always jive up. Anyway. All right, folks. So Thank you all for joining us, for joining me this time out here. Dad will be back. We have a feedback episode coming up. We got all kinds of stuff planned for 2025. Thank you all for joining us in the new year. We hope your 2024 ended well. We hope your 2025 is off to a killer start and that you have a great year. So like we say here at Box Buds and Babes, keep those cards and letters coming and keep watching the skies.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
This has been an episode of Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast. If you'd like to contact me, please email the show at botsbugsbabes@gmail.com. If you'd like to find me online, I'm on Facebook under my name, Jason Giaconetti. I often contribute to the Two True Freaks Facebook group. You can visit my Facebook page, The Art of Horror Collective, and you can search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective. On Instagram, find me under my name, Jason Giaconetti, and search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective, as well as the new hashtag Bots Bugs Babes Podcast. I'm the only one using them. I'm also on Twitter at Jason Giaconetti, and you can visit my webpage at www.theartofhorrorcollective.wordpress.com. All movies, characters, stories, music, etc., are properties of their respective holders. This is a fan work, and any use of any property is purely for review, discussion, entertainment. So don't sue me. I ain't got anything anyway.
There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow!
Will you stop?